An 11th Hour Films production. I dreamed in a dream. I saw a city invincible to the attacks of the whole of the rest of the earth. I dreamed that was the new city of friends. Nothing was greater than the quality of robust love. It led the rest. It was seen every hour in the actions of the men of that city and in all their looks and words. Walt Whitman, Leaves of Grass. 9/12, From Chaos to Community. Next, in a tenement hallway, a mustached man wearing a red bandana.
We wanted to do some other work to the flag so that we could hang it a different way, but it is the memorial flag, so we're gonna drop it the memorial way down.
What's the memorial way?
The stars up on the top and the vertical drop, because that's how it was hanging at Ground Zero, so we're gonna keep it the same way.
Yeah, we're going up and down.
Now on a rooftop, he stands with a white-haired man beside a huge American flag.
This is the top.
Okay.
Right?
But here's the problem.
Yeah.
This side is filthy, rotten, dirty. This side is clean.
So yeah, we can't hang it wrong.
Really?
You ain't gonna see the dirt, dude.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And besides, it's Ground Zero dirt.
Okay.
You know, this is what we lived with down there, so okay. I'm not ashamed of it.
No, I'm not either. A lot of people were asking us, you know, what's that flag? Where did it come from?
Every year, 9/11, we get calls from a lot of people from all over the country.
A sign, thank you, this flag gives us much courage.
On September, there'll be like homing pigeons.
I got that yesterday.
You got it good, bud.
Now the flag covers the entire rooftop. The white-haired man, the mustached man, and a third man thread a rope through one end of the flag. Below, a man standing on a sidewalk holds up one hand. Asian women standing in an open-air produce market gaze upward.
This building,
I got you.
Seven people working down in Ground Zero.
Yeah.
Six of them were volunteers. Stevie was on the payroll. Well, I mean, when you really think about it, really. But seven people out of one building.
That's good.
A lot of these people felt the need, and they had to be down there, and I was one of them. So since the 12th, just went down there and kept going just to help.
A group of people stands on the rooftop. Every September 11th, former volunteers and recovery workers reunite in Lower Manhattan to remember their work at Ground Zero. Next, the mustached man, John Casalin Nuovo, landlord, Chinatown.
It was the first anniversary, and it was still really fresh, because it had only been a few months for most of us. So it was like, okay, we need something so our people can come by and talk, and we decided this would have been the ideal thing. Put the flag up.
Casalin Nuovo drags one end of the flag across the roof.
Seen that flag and they knew exactly where it was because we looked at it every day for, you know, at least 6-7 months.
The white-haired man points. John McGuire, owner, Gotham Seafood.
That's where the flag hung on One Liberty, that big black building there. See it, the last one, straight all the way through?
He indicates a distant high-rise building.
That's where this flag hung, overlooking Ground Zero.
Here we go.
Now, photos of the flag on display.
This is the flag in action. This is how quick we had it up. This was still going on.
When you lived downtown, a couple blocks away, you know, they attacked our neighborhood, as opposed to, you know, kind of a country thing. It was like they attacked our neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, this was personal. It really was.
Next, a woman with long, dark hair, Denise Lutri Casalin Nuovo, landlord, Chinatown.
Johnny and I were watching everything from like the roof, so our thing was, oh my god, think all those people, oh my god, we need to get in there just to help, to find people. There's got to be people alive.
Through a gap in the skyline, a crane sits atop a building under construction. The sun blazes in a bright blue sky.
Then we went downstairs and just thousands and thousands of people
walking.
So we just asked anybody, as they were going by, do you need any water? Do you need a bathroom? Do you need a phone? Whatever you need.
In a photo, people stagger out of a dust cloud.
We went to Red Cross, and they told us, well, give blood. They wouldn't let us through. They told us we were non-uniformed personnel, they called us, so you can't come down. Couldn't do anything. The next morning at 3:00 in the morning, myself and Debbie, we walked up to the Salvation Army. And they asked, what can you do? I said, well, I've done construction most of my life. And they said, that's what you want to do? I said, yeah, I'll do construction. I want to dig.
The Casalin and Nuovo sit together on a couch.
I lied. I said I was an iron worker. I was actually a sheet metal worker. But I had my gear on me. I had a safety harness. And listen, I says, I've been burning steel my whole life. I says, I know I can do something good. The guys just said, they just let me in. I was amazed.
So they gave us tags and next thing we knew, they took us down in there. It must have been about 5 o'clock in the morning.
Now, photos of Ground Zero. Sunlight shines through the debris of the collapsed World Trade Center towers. Men in hard hats walk through smoking rubble. Skyscrapers surround an enormous pile of twisted metal and concrete. Rescuers climb over fallen steel beams.
Then we just started going into the pile. So everything was being put into the 5-gallon buckets and then passed down the line of people.
Wearing dust masks, volunteers stand in a line and pass plastic buckets filled with debris. A woman dumps a bucket onto a pile of dirt and concrete fragments. Walking in slow motion, policemen wear goggles, hard hats, and masks.
The third day, they told Debbie and myself that we couldn't dig because we weren't union.
Standing in front of a group of firemen, a fire chief extends his arms.
And the same guy who welcomed me in because I knew about pumps says to me, you can't come in unless you got a book. I said, what are you talking about, a book?
I'm here to volunteer.
Yeah. And they said, no can do.
So we started doing supplies and we set up like a little mini triage for washing out eyes.
A woman holds a plastic bottle filled with fluid over a man's closed eyes. A man wearing a hard hat browses medical supplies.
We would go and try to find something for somebody.
Bring food.
Who would come to us and say, I need pants. My pants have burned off of me, so I need new pants.
Shoes and boots spill out of cardboard boxes.
In the beginning, it was tops and a couple of tents.
Now supply tables, the Salvation Army Disaster Services.
Water, ice was a big thing.
A man pushes a wheelbarrow of bottled drinks.
I just went to the corner, there's a Salvation Army canteen. I asked them if they needed anything. They said, yeah, we're desperate for ice. We have canteens all over the place with no ice. Okay, great. Loaded my truck up with about 3,000 pounds of ice. It ran out in about a half an hour.
A gloved man wearing a mask carries a box over one shoulder.
So I just took it upon myself to try to find ice. Called all the ice guys in the city.
In a photo, people pass bags of ice out of a Gotham seafood truck. Near a fireman, bags of ice fill large plastic tubs.
People said, ice, here's a number, call this guy, and it became this whole thing.
Do the work we had to do, run around, see what people needed. And if we weren't supposed to do it, and they still needed it, we always managed a way to get it done.
So. That's a good way to put it. Typical New York, you know.
In a photo, McGuire chats with a man as they face the smoldering debris at Ground Zero. Next, a blonde man.
The people that volunteered did whatever they had to do. They jumped fences. Hop in the back of trucks. They would do whatever they had to do in the beginning days to get down there.
Rescue personnel ride on a flatbed truck through New York City.
They really had to earn their keep because they were under constant review.
A serviceman wearing camouflage fatigues holds a bundle of red badges.
I took that for granted because I was uniform. I was there. I just could go anywhere I want, do anything I want. It was my job to be there.
Stephen Schreck, Engine 280, Ladder 132, FDNY.
At Ground Zero, I was a fire marshal.
Retired 2004. In photos, firemen standing atop ladders hose down smoking rubble.
Initially, I was just digging because I had friends that were lost from my old firehouse.
A huge pile of twisted wreckage looms behind a fireman.
Then I got assigned to the morgue, and obviously you know what you do there.
Schreck blinks, spray-painted on a brick wall in red paint, morgue. Next, Deborah Kahn, office worker.
He was isolated for, I'd say, 2 months in the morgue. So when he came out, he didn't really see anything outside the
morgue. I just
wanted
to see live people.
Yeah, so.
Debbie worked at the Hard Hat Cafe. On occasion, I would go down there and just to see a smiling face and a familiar face of someone working outside of the morgue. And I met Debbie one day. Conversation started. It was like I was coming from battle and I was going and I was seeing people in the USO.
Cleanup workers lounge outside a makeshift tent, Hard Hat Cafe. On tables, flowers and small American flags protrude from empty water bottles.
Denise kept saying to me, after We met each other. Oh, that guy, he's so miserable.
Grumpy.
He's so grumpy. He's, you know, but you know what? That's what we were down there. We were down there, like, just so the guys could come in and they could be miserable and they could be grumpy and we would listen.
When I first met Steve, Steve didn't smile. Steve grunted at you. He didn't want anybody smiling.
Shrek smirks.
Told you.
And we just would work on him every day. When he'd come in, we'd go, hi.
And I heard that they would hand them off to each other, like,
yeah.
Okay, you go talk to him.
It's your turn now.
You go talk to him. You work on him.
Standing there in my SWAT
one day,
team
outfit.
We were the same clothes
every
day.
Somebody, we were laughing or smiling or something.
Like
he goes,
week.
This is no party.
He shrugs.
Hey, he lost a friend. You know,
he lost 50.
But we worked on him.
After a while, I mean, it didn't take, I wouldn't quite call it a carnival atmosphere, but a lot of people were trying to just get in to see it. And they would bring their kids. And my mentality was that Disney World was 1,000 miles south. And I wouldn't let anybody in that I was in charge. Like, they weren't getting by me.
They're very different because
I didn't want my picture taken.
I felt the opposite, that everybody, every American should be in there, and anybody that I could bring in to show or explain what had gone on so that they could go back home and see and tell other people really what happened here. You know, that to me was very important.
Yeah, we had different jobs. You know, my job, I thought my job was pretty, I wouldn't say private, but it wasn't something that like everybody should, you know, be exposed to, and probably carried over into, you know, the way I felt about the whole place. It was kind of like, to me, it was a sacred place that if you didn't belong there, you shouldn't have been there.
Shrek shrugs and looks away. Next, John Castellanuovo walks in a small crowd of people. Ground Zero annual 9/11 ceremony. He stops beside a woman wearing a blue uniform. A choir sings beside a large metal overhang, World Trade Center. A building under construction looms behind it. As Castellanuovo walks on, he pats the shoulder of a sobbing woman. Next, people stare through a metal fence adorned with bouquets of flowers.
Abad. Maria Rose Abad. Andrew Anthony Abate. Vincent Abate.
Now, my dearest and lovely son,
a woman in the crowd wipes tears from her eyes.
Ah, man, this is a tough one.
Next, Castellanuovo walks around Ground Zero.
Look at this place. It looks so different.
He stops and points.
Remember, our tents were right here, the generators were there. And we had thousands of guys every day come in and out.
And inscribed it to our daughter.
A lot of volunteers.
Tears could bring you back to me.
It's amazing. I don't know how many meals they served, but it had to be millions.
With all the tears I've cried.
It was wild.
He strolls forward while stroking his mustache.
I'd ask of God in prayer to let me have just one more day to show how much I care.
What's up, brother?
How are you seeing you?
Castellanuovo hugs a bearded man.
Yeah, G, how are you? You know, we're having an open house today.
Are we open by the house? I'll be there.
This is a huge American flag.
Oh, you came in. Remember the one that was hanging over there? We got it.
Later, Castellanuovo walks with a brunette woman.
Liz, you could tell us about Burger King. You were one of the first people in there.
It started out that night at Brooks Brothers. The gurneys were all set up and the IV bags were set up. Nobody used them. Nobody came out.
In black and white photos, light shines through a dirty window in a room filled with debris. Firemen climb a pile of rubble beside a bare-chested mannequin. In a color photo, spray paint on a Burger King restaurant, NYPD Temp HQ.
When the morgue and the triage took over, got kicked over to the Burger King, but That's where I slept and stayed for like the first week. So that was home. I was afraid if I left, they wouldn't let me back. I wasn't even supposed to be here anyway, you know, but I just didn't want to leave. If you were so busy and in the middle of everything, even though you were here, you didn't mourn. It was a safer world in here than it was outside.
Liz Carvajal, private investigator, 2002 to present. In a photo, a fireman gazes out from blasted out windows.
Anthony Luparello.
Gary Frederick Lutnick.
And my beloved son, Brian Christopher Navani. We love you. You are forever in our hearts.
Remember when they'd recover somebody, how the whole site would shut down. Remember, Liz? Got real quiet. And you knew.
Viewed from above, sections of the collapsed towers jut away from a central crater.
And the guys on the pile, they looked like busy little ants. And everybody had a smile for the next guy. The next girl, there was nothing but love. Right, Liz? There's love everywhere.
That's what kept it going.
Yeah, it really did.
I met my boyfriend Alex here. We were friends though for a while until after the first anniversary, and then we started dating. But him, he's very special in my life, and we live together and planning to have a future together.
A dark-haired man takes Liz's hand.
He is a New York City firefighter. He was detailed with GPS. They had to tag the remains that were found and put them in a computer so that way when it was all over they can kind of figure out how people ended up where. It was just such devastation that, you know, so you had a lot of emotion that you were carrying around down there. Friendship started when you needed, you know, somebody else to go through the hurt with. I know I had nightmare, like occasionally something would spring back. Just knowing that he wouldn't question it or not know how to respond, like he knew. So that's been good because you left there so heavy.
At the ceremony, a large flag flies at half-mast. Wearing a blue dress uniform, a brunette woman stands with other firefighters. Amalia Solano, firefighting recruit, Prince William County, Virginia.
I never really knew about the fire department, and that being a career for me, it was never even a topic. And after spending so much time at Ground Zero, so I worked with the Salvation Army for a little while, and then that's when I met a lot of the fire department, and they asked me if I wanted to join up as a civilian doing the same thing they did. Recoveries and doing their shifts and staying down there for so long, I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the camaraderie. I fell in love with the tools. I fell in love with the family atmosphere. When you're working outside, just right on the perimeter, it's one thing.
In a photograph, a man wearing brown overalls sits on a folding chair. A fireman's jacket is draped over a chair beside him. In another photo, a pile of firemen's jackets lie on a city street. Men wearing full protective gear lie back against a heap of rubble.
When you see the guys coming in, you see them and they have this like glassy stare, and you know when they're hurt, and you know when they just, when they need something, you're doing your best just to help them out. But when you're actually in there and you're actually doing it, it's completely different.
Firemen wearing masks trudge out of a dust cloud.
You're right there beside them, and you're digging for people, and you're digging to find anything that you can find.
As people work, sunlight shines through a white haze.
It just consumes you. It became me.
Huge clouds of white dust billow up from the wreckage.
I went down the first shift to go dig, and they were like, they gave me a gardening tool, you know, the three-pronged gardening tool. And they're like, okay, well, just, you know, don't hurt yourself. And that's, you were looking through stuff with a three-pronged garden tool. I mean, it was like, you didn't think about it then, but thinking about it now, I mean, that's crazy, all that stuff. And you're here with your little, you know, your shovel or your garden tool trying to look through.
Solana wipes one hand over her mouth. Next, at Ground Zero, heavy machines with large claws sort through the rubble. At the ceremony, Carvajal, Casalu Nuovo, and Solano stand shoulder to shoulder. Solano dabs her eyes with a handkerchief.
The worst thing coming out of this, the hardest thing that I've had to deal with is, like, I always think I should have done more. I always think I could have done better. So I personally wrestle with that. I personally wrestle with, well, what if I was tired and I overlooked somebody? You know, what if I was like, you know, you have to laugh, you have to goof off, but what if I was doing that a little too much and I missed somebody? You know, I...
Outside a firehouse, firefighters standing at attention salute. Standing in their ranks, Solano closes her eyes for a moment, then blinks and opens them.
We found this note tucked into the corner of a scrapbook in the family center. When you remember me, it means that you have carried something of who I am with you, that I have left some mark of who I am on who you are.
She hugs another firefighter as people disperse. Many firefighters stand with their heads lowered. Now, as the Empire State Building looms in the distance, cars crowd a street lined with tall buildings. Next, back on the rooftop.
Big John, are we ready?
Yeah,
let's do it.
Does it feel like getting ready?
We're doing it.
The group carries the huge flag to the edge of the roof.
Yeah, I'm cool.
Okay, gentlemen.
Guys, get ready. Pedro, you ready?
Working together, they ease the flag over the side of the building. A person standing one floor below them steadies the bottom of the flag.
Yeah, once we line it up on the roof.
Wind billows the huge flag as the team lowers it. People standing on the street gaze upward. A dog watches the bottom of the flag descend past an open window. Positioned on fire escapes, people guide the flag downward.
Woo! It's fantastic. It makes you proud, don't it? Look at all these people, they're happy.
Casale Nuovo gazes up at the flag.
Yeah, that looks beautiful.
McGuire also walks on street level.
I don't know if you could consider me an incredibly gung-ho patriot. I mean, I was patriotic, but the flags, you know, never hung them out of my house, never, you know, 4th of July. Never really thought about it, actually, you know? Kind of did it as out of habit, but once you went down there and you saw all the stuff, you know, the humanity of human beings helping other human beings.
A man wears a flag shirt.
You know, I had a million flag shirts ready to go. And the joke was, not only could I organize your disaster, but I can accessorize it too.
John Cadu, sales associate.
That was good because I got part of Johnny's shirt.
I know.
I love that shirt.
I was the flag attendant in elementary school for 3 years. I'm a diehard patriot right from the get-go. And they used to call me the flag man. And then that got shortened to the fag man, you know, but whatever.
Now Cadu sits on a building ledge.
Pass it through to you again like we did last year.
He holds a rope attached to the flag.
But I just had an angioplasty yesterday, and I got out of the hospital today at noon. And, you know, when John called and said, you know, we're doing the flag, and I said, well, I don't know how much I can really help, but I would definitely be there.
You too, man.
It's good to be alive.
Yeah. Because if I'm going to drop dead, I want to drop dead with these people.
On the roof, Deborah Kahn holds Cadu's hand. Next, the unfurled flag covers five stories of the apartment building. A pair of sailors walks on ground level. One points upward and smiles. The two sailors walk into the building entrance. A handwritten sign hangs in a hallway. 9/11 Gathering, Apartment 4. Inside an apartment, men and women, some wearing firefighters' uniforms, hold drinks or plates of food as they chat. Denise pours a glass of champagne. Casalin Nuovo carries a tray of cups filled with food resembling custard. Denise hugs and kisses a bald fireman. People on a balcony hold their thumbs up to motorcyclists below. One of the sailors pumps one fist in the air. A woman riding on the back of a motorcycle flashes peace signs with her fingers. People mingle on a balcony or chat inside the apartment.
And I had to get it out of ground zero. I'm carrying in my sweatshirt. I'm going to do time for carrying a midget at ground zero.
Casalin Nuovo points to a garden gnome.
You're delivering meat and none of us would budge. We're yelling out the window, we got to get to the 1010 house for meat. They go, we have blood for the 1010 house. Go, what? We got blood. We're going. All right, I guess we gotta back off of that. They lied.
Next, inside the party, two women hug. Khan stands beside the bald fireman.
Okay, is it running?
Whatever.
I'm his favorite.
That's a fact.
Khan smiles. Next, the blonde woman kisses the fireman. People on the balcony wave to passing cars. One of the sailors climbs into a limousine. Yeah. The dark-haired sailor ushers a group of young women out of the limousine.
Only in New York!
A woman wearing a sailor's cap and a bridal veil rides on his shoulders. Two sailors dance. Two sailors kiss the woman wearing the veil.
It's kind of hard to believe it's 9/11 the way these assholes are carrying on, the way you guys are egging them on with the camera.
Shrek approaches the sailors.
I don't think people are dancing in the street acting like assholes on the 77. Why don't you guys take it easy instead of screaming for them? Same party.
We're not screaming.
I'm right here, man. I hear you loud and clear. All right. You guys are out of control.
I'm sorry.
It's 9/11, man.
Donna,
Donna.
I understand. I'm sorry. Yeah. All
right. I'm sorry to, you know, be a...
No, but
calm down.
You
but
know what? The city really
appreciate
hot.
It. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I appreciate it.
But still, you know?
And I said to the guys, how many people do you see dancing on December 7th? Have a little respect.
It was a very emotional day.
Too much of a contrast to, you know, I didn't deal with it too well. I mean, I spoke to the right guy, I guess, because there were three of them and one of me. Not any one of them probably could have torn me apart.
The sailors are going to Kuwait, and they're down there enjoying their life and the fact that they're alive. He can't make everyone feel the way he's feeling right now. That's his own space. That's where he's at right now. And Paul, who lost his son, who's another son who was sick, is in there enjoying life, playing pool. And that's how it should be.
Paul, a white-haired man, shoots pool inside the apartment.
Retired firefighter Paul Geidel, New York City Fire Department. I was down at Ground Zero to recover my son and 3,000 people that were lost there.
In a photograph, a black-haired fireman with a thick mustache smiles broadly.
Well, over the months I spent down there, I met a lot of fine people down there that helped us, Red Cross people, Salvation Army people, church people, and they fed us, they kept us warm, and they kept us going, to be honest with you. If it wasn't for them, I don't know how we would have made out day in and day out, night in and night out. This is Annie.
Annie Bandez, multimedia artist.
That's Annie.
Alicia.
Alicia Betton, court reporter.
And they were there every night I was there. They worked that second shift. And we're missing about seven or eight or ten. And they're the bubble girls.
Short-haired Annie smiles.
All bubble girls. Well, it was a big tent. And it looked like a big bubble in lower Manhattan. And every night it was lit up because of lights inside. It was white. And it was like one big team.
We were supposed to go around the tables and try to lift the guys' spirits as, you know, while we're cleaning the tables. And every time we wound up sitting with him, it's kind of reversed. He would tell us
stories. Yeah, my table ended up with... The poor other people never got served.
And the tables were a mess.
Yeah.
The group of fathers were down there for the entire time looking, and searching, and you know, new people come in. They didn't know what they were going through, how long they've been here, there, and what they were doing. And the group of fathers are just very special to us. We fell in love with them. They broke our hearts.
Brown-haired Alicia's eyes well up with tears. Sitting beside her, Paul takes her hand in his.
Want to see Gary's picture?
Paul pulls up his left shirt sleeve, revealing a tattoo of a mustached fireman on his upper arm.
So not only in my heart, he's on my arm.
We don't know exactly what tower he was in. I imagine he was with the rest of the rescue company in North Tower. Gary was in the fire department for, I think, 19 years. 10 and a half months. He had about 4 tours to go before his retirement. We're on the corner of firefighter Gary Geidel and Amboy Road, Tottenville. There's a sign here. I have 3 sons who are firefighters. One was killed and the other 2 are alive.
A photo of 2 beefy firemen.
This is Michael. He works in Rescue 1 right now. He worked with Gary. They worked together many tours. I'm lucky they both were off that day, but Gary came in for overtime. Their lockers were together, next to one another. And that's Ralph. He spent the whole winter up there with me and Michael, looking for Gary and all the other people. Baker has a son, and he becomes a baker. Or a truck driver has a son, and he becomes a truck driver.
In a photo, Paul holds a pitchfork beside one of his sons.
I didn't realize there was that many sons that worked as firefighters following their dad's footsteps. And my daughter's picture is not here because she didn't become a firefighter. However, she was down there at the Trade Center digging herself. We snuck her in there. And I found myself back working at the Trade Center. I felt like I was right back in the thick of it all. I met over 20 fathers that were looking and digging side by side with me, looking for their missing sons.
Framed photos and newspaper clippings cover the wall of a den. Next in photograph, a group of older firemen holding photos of younger firemen in their hands or inside their overturned caps. A man standing in the center of the group holds a helmet bearing the number 32. Paul stands in the group.
They had a group of fathers that were there, like Paul. You're right there beside him, and you're digging, and you're digging for people, and you're digging to find anything that you can find, and you see this father.
Amalia Solano shakes her head. In the photograph of fathers, the men wear stoic expressions.
And I remember this guy. Just tell me if it's my son, you know? Just couldn't even look. And so you see these dads going through this, and it was like the worst possible thing a fire department can go through. But it was also like, it showed the best of a fire department.
Wearing a denim jacket and a fire helmet, Paul poses with other rescue workers. Next, the bald fireman.
He's retired for 20 years, and here they are trying to dig for the sons, and most of them never found their sons. And I would make sure that they wouldn't walk up and down the hills.
What is it?
And I would always throw them in a cart and drive them up and bring them up to the bubble.
Joseph Tooley O'Toole, Ladder 41, FDNY. Next, photos of the bubble, a large white tent sheltering people sitting at round tables. Next, Alex Lopez, Ladder 41, FDNY.
And a lot of guys, as September 11th and then past a couple of years, have passed away doing the job that they love doing, so.
A 9/11 memorial plaque lists the names of fallen firefighters. Dedicated to the bravery of the members of Engine 33 and Ladder 9 who made the supreme sacrifice. Manhattan, Box 558087, World Trade Center.
Once in a while you get scared, yeah, you're gonna get scared. But you gotta think on your feet. You can't panic or freeze up. So that's the job we choose. That's, you know, I mean, I like going to work, I like going to fires. And you get most of the guys and people say you're crazy.
Firefighter uniforms fill metal shelves. Black firefighter jackets with yellow and silver bands around the arms hang on racks.
Yes, they did prepare us and they told us what we were going to see in our career and to learn how to handle it.
Staring to one side, Lopez smiles.
They should have had, I think, just somebody down there just talking to guys, like a debriefing.
Standing nearby, Liz Carvajal stares at him.
Sometimes guys would come and ask for Denise. They'd say, John, is Denise around? They'd go talk with her. I can understand that.
In a photo, a bald man sits on a bench with Denise and leans his head against her.
I hated it, but I understand. This is always an underlying factor with men.
Now a photo of a huge group of search and rescue workers gathered around smoking rubble.
Every day, there was 400 to 500 people that you knew.
Standing near demolition equipment, workers in hard hats mingle with firefighters. Massive piles of twisted wreckage and broken concrete loom behind them.
I didn't know anybody's name. I called everybody Paulie, but Denise knew their names. Knew their names, I couldn't get them straight for nothing.
At times when they come in after seeing something horrible, they didn't look at us like we were women.
Oh no.
We were someone to talk to.
In photos, Khan smiles as she poses with men and women at Ground Zero.
They just wanted to unload. We weren't going to try to preach to them. We were just listening.
Near a collection of boards and plastic buckets, men wearing brown overalls sit on chairs.
It was easier for them sometimes to talk to some of the women volunteers than it was to talk to the religious people. Because not everybody's really religious. A lot of people were down there going, there can't be a God if this could happen.
At night, bright lights set onto tall poles illuminate the work site. A man wearing a dust mask walks away from a badly damaged building. In another photograph, sunlight streams through a section of a collapsed tower. Other sections of the building's steel infrastructure, which resemble triple-railed train tracks, jut up into clouds of dust.
Guys would come in and they'd tell you, man, don't touch me, man. I was just in a bad spot. And you knew they were working tight. You know,
you'd see these grown men, you know, big guys, you know, drive Harleys, you know, big construction workers, and they'd come out and you'd see them like just pale because of something they saw. So you had to be there for them. But the one thing you couldn't do is you couldn't cry.
Firemen in brown overalls hike through Ground Zero.
As I listened, it was taking the pain off of whoever was telling me and taking it on myself, which was a lot of pressure, you know, because you get crunched down and and it's like you can take so much in. But, you know, you do your best and, you know, there were days like, you know, go for a couple of months and then you go somewhere and you go hysterical, you know, or you have a little breakdown and you walk around going, apologizing to the ground that you're stepping on the people. I'm sorry. You know, when you realize I'm stepping on them, you know, and just...
Smiling, Khan looks down. In a photo, a cable lifts twisted debris from a pile of rubble.
It was so overwhelming, and you did take on their grief. It became really hard, but that was like the one major rule. You didn't cry there. You didn't lose it there. Whatever you do at home is fine.
In a photo, Carvajal wears a hard hat decorated like an American flag. She poses beside another woman outside a Salvation Army tent. In another photo, five women pose around a smiling man.
I was down there for a while. I was all by myself after a hard day digging around, and it was a long, arduous day working down the hole. So you just needed a break. You needed some kind of peace and quiet.
Inside the bubble, people eat at round tables. One man sleeps in a bunk. A woman smiles as she works on a food line.
It was nice to meet these people, you know, knowing that somebody was supporting you.
Smiling cafeteria workers wear red Salvation Army aprons.
I went in for a sandwich. I grabbed the first pretty girl and I said, I have two daughters at home and a lovely wife. And when I sit down to eat, I usually have a pretty face in front of me. Would you mind sitting here, keeping me company? And I did it the next day, another one. After a while, I was sitting at a table with seven or eight different women. can't help myself.
O'Toole shrugs.
I got to like touching people, you know what I mean? You're working in that hole all day long. It was, you're touching shit, garbage, burnt ashes, and, you know, wires, rebar, steel. Nothing soft, nothing human. So when I got a chance for it, I grabbed and I hugged and I kissed.
A man wipes O'Toole's cheek.
Don't be silly.
Lipstick, that's what happens.
War wounds. Yeah. I kiss some ugly men too. Nice, how are you?
He hugs two large men.
Thank you.
See you next year, yeah?
Yeah.
See, I told you I kiss ugly men.
I was down there for a while, and everyone was my favorite. Everybody. One night, I came down, and one of the girls says, I got something for you. And she lined up 12 of the Salvation Army girls, and they all started doing like a strip. And they pull off their shirts, and underneath they had a t-shirt that said, a big heart with Thule. And on the back it said, you are my favorite.
In a photo, women wearing t-shirts dance in a line, you are my favorite.
That was fantastic.
I'm his favorite. I'm his favorite, damn it.
No, he's my favorite.
No, sir.
I'm his favorite.
That's all right. This is a whole little world. You can't tell anyone what happened here because no one would understand. My wife and my daughters were very supportive of me. Sometimes I thought I spent too much time down there, that I was going nuts, but I was a man on a mission.
O'Toole, Lopez, and Carvajal walk together toward the World Trade Center site. Now in a photo, O'Toole leans on a wooden tool's handle.
I do not miss one minute of working in that pit. I wouldn't want to go back there at all. Ralph, since then, was diagnosed with cancer of the throat area. He had a little lump in his throat, and he went to the doctors, and they found cancer of the neck area, and they took care of the problem, hopefully. And we feel it's a direct result of the working down at the Trade Center. Certainly triggered it. My bubble girls got together, they found out about it, and all of a sudden, things just took off. And they had a fundraiser, and they raised money to pay for some of his bills.
Now a nightclub.
Are there a lot of firemen here? What's with the shorts and firemen? I ain't feeling the shorts. The only people who wear shorts are Republicans and children.
How are you?
That's a little story you ought to know.
Annie performs on a stage.
They're drinking, my friend.
Conley.
Conley, nice to meet you.
So maybe one for my baby and one more for me.
Hall poses for a photograph, then mingles with people near a bar. Later, he takes the stage.
Hey, folks, 9-11, I met a very close, became very close with a friend of mine. He was one of the band of dads. And I'd like to bring up and introduce you to Lee Iolpi.
Next, Lee Iolpi, Rescue 2, FDNY, retired 1996.
Hi, good evening. How's everybody? Ralph had a bit of a problem. We're here to try and raise as much money as we can.
Iolpi holds up a firefighter's helmet.
This is a, well, you see the number line, right? 343.
This,
I was just asked, does a man come with it? Wait a minute.
Iolpi puts on the helmet.
Ralph has been really great. He's one of the best people we ever met. How are you, Ralph? This is our song, a little song we wrote for Ralph. And we wrote it because, you know what? There's not one song on the planet that was ever a hit that had the word Ralph in it. And I'm going to bring up my bubble girl Beatrice right now. Here it comes! Cheryl Arlock, Alicia, Ben, Buddy Davies.
Oh, Ralphie, you're so fine, you're so fine, you blow my mind. Hey, Ralphie! Hey, Ralphie! You stuck around all night, but now you get your song. Your butt's getting sore.
sore, your mustache growing long. You hope we don't screw it up and get the words all wrong, Ralphie.
Brown-haired, mustached Ralph Guidel smiles in the audience. Women on stage hoot and clap. Ralph stands and hugs a woman. A man wipes tears from a brunette woman's face. On stage, Ralph shakes his head as he holds a microphone. Next, the crying woman, Barbara Guidel.
Ralph can't speak very well because he has one salivary gland left. His mouth gets real dry and he gets choked up. And I'm a big mouth. When 9/11 happened, we were 3,000 miles away. We watched it from our television set. We knew that one of his brothers was there. And he had to come here. I was 3,000 miles away. He was here. These incredible people took care of my husband for me. They fed him. They gave him the emotional support that he needed. I couldn't give him a hug. I love it that these ladies could hug my husband and share that love.
Barbara presses her lips together and nods.
Bubble Girls are awesome. I could never repay you for giving everything.
Guys were having fights with their wives because they didn't understand. They didn't understand the camaraderie, because after you're working 12 or 14 hours with people, when you go home, what'd you talk about? You talk about them. And that started friction in some households. So I remember we had a party one night and some of the guys brought their wives. And then after they seen everybody and the way how everybody interacted, it wasn't a jealousy thing anymore. Because these were people that we were doing some crazy stuff. And we became friends, a lot tighter than most people normally do.
Some wives could handle it better than others. Some got right behind their spouse, and while they couldn't make it easier, they made it more bearable. As the record proves, there was a lot of problems that arose soon after. You know, marriages that were on the rocks crashed.
So a lot of people broke up.
Ooh, almost. It's not too cool.
You know, we went through all our shit years ago, so this did not make us think
that. I don't remember any of that.
Yeah, what planet were you on, dude? Ooh.
Sometimes this is the only thing that made people realize it was time to get out.
Yeah.
Was simply that, man, boom, it could be over in an hour, it could be over in a minute.
It really made people stop and take stock in where they were going and what they were doing, what direction they were heading.
I just looked at things different. Life's too short, and you gotta enjoy it while you're here, because you never know. That's what it taught me.
Cars travel down a highway toward the New York City skyline. Inside an apartment, Carvajal stands beside Lopez in front of a hallway.
As he was, you were already in the process of starting with a divorce attorney, is when we started dating, and just very slow, because I kind of thought, well, you know, maybe it is because of the Trade Center. A lot of us miss the site in the sense of the friendships. And after it ended, it was like, okay, well now what? And I didn't want it to be like, oh, okay, well, this is, maybe I'll get that feeling back if I cling on to this person.
Now outside, they hold hands as they walk together.
I think we just took things slow. It was like day by day. And then our feelings just grew, and we knew that it wasn't anything that was just going to be casual or pass by, and it was a good thing that did come out of such a horrible situation.
Next, Khan and Shrek stand on the rooftop.
There was a lot of talking, and a lot of healing went on with our talking, and it developed into really true love. So.
Yeah.
He smiles and wraps his arms around her.
Maybe I'm supposed to help him in some way. Special, you know, like...
Save my life?
Yeah. He says I saved his life, but he saved me too.
They kiss.
She brought me from despair to...
I brought him back to himself.
Happiness. Back to normal.
Next, standing on a building rooftop across from Casa del Nuovo, Shrek waves his arms.
How's that?
Casa del Nuovo lowers one end of the flag. On street level, a line of people hold the bottom of the huge American flag as it is slowly lowered on ropes. Next, photos and artifacts adorn a tall, wide pillar, the last steel beam.
We were down there the last day when they shut it down. You know, when it was over, you hugged every goodbye, you said goodbye, but it was wild because you knew tomorrow morning.
Casa del Nuovo gives a man a folded flag.
That was it. There was no going down. But that day, when everybody broke up, it was extremely quiet, I remember that.
Sailors march into the pit.
Everybody was in their own head saying, wow, tomorrow, we're not coming down here. Not gonna see this guy tomorrow. Not gonna see this guy tomorrow.
Workmen wearing safety vests walk in a large group.
You have this whole group of people that you're basically living with, and it's just you and that group, and it's a big family, and then all of a sudden it's over, and everybody has to go their separate ways.
As they walk, the workmen gaze toward ground zero over a low concrete barrier.
When it ended, it was like a lot of people were like, kind of lost. What are we going to do now?
The people gather around the last standing steel beam.
Some people can handle that a little more and they refocus. On other people, it's harder because, you know, maybe that was their lifeline and maybe that was, you know, what was keeping them through, and now they don't have that.
Glowing metal sparks spew up from the base of the beam, which tips to one side. A cable slowly lowers the beam to the ground.
It was this cocoon of, like, wonderfulness. You know, I was hoping that that spirit could be maintained, but it's in a big city like New York, it's hard.
I even had my life changed, you know, I tried to become less cynical about just work and bullshit, but...
Yeah.
In slow motion, firemen, police officers, and other people slowly depart from the nighttime ceremony.
You know, it's my city, I love it. And, you know, and then I went down there and fell in love with people. You know, I met Paulie and Alicia, you know, it's like my long lost sister. It brought the best out in people.
Annie turns toward Alicia, who sits on the other side of Paul.
I kind of wish we never met.
Yeah.
Alicia nods her head. Paul smiles. Next, Paul wears a fireman's helmet at the Ground Zero ceremony. He kisses a brunette woman as people mingle around them. Next, men wearing kilts hold American flags as they march past the crowd. Back at the apartment building, Solano, Cadu, and others hold the once folded flag.
Come on, pull it out nice and slow. Don't let it hit the ground. Come on, guys.
It was a proud time for me to be able to be down there and help these people. The job sucked. It was the worst job in the world. But I was honored that I was down there.
Wow, look at that phone, man.
A lot of people didn't get the chance to get down there, and that was sad. Because there were a lot more people that really wanted to help. And they just didn't get the chance. We were the fortunate ones, the ones who worked down there. We really were. We were blessed.
The group folds the flag into a triangle.
Next year.
Now dawn. The sky lightens behind the New York City skyline. Two shafts of light next to each other shine upward, piercing the early morn. Directed by Susanna Styron, produced by Jackie Oakes and Susanna Styron. A list of other credits follows, including executive producers Robert J. Lunder and Anthony Sicenzio. description made possible by a grant from the U.S. Department of Education. Description created by NCI Described Media. This is Joel Snyder.